Ensuring patients receive the right care at the right time has always been one of the biggest challenges that we face in healthcare. How do we streamline these often complex journeys that patients take through the healthcare system? With me today on Talking Health Tech, I'm joined by Nick White and Kay Hocking from Alcidion, who are at the forefront of patient flow solutions. And in this episode, we talk about how hospitals ensure beds are available when they're needed, ward resources are optimized, and clinical care is seamless. We'll uncover the components of a comprehensive patient flow solution, from ward management to command centers, and we'll delve into the impact of patient flow solutions on clinical care, data interoperability, and real-time integration. Plus a lot more too. Collaboration starts with a conversation, Team Health Tech. Let's make it happen. This is Talking Health Tech with me, Peter Birch, featuring content and community about technology in healthcare. Between now and the end of June, we're conducting the 2024 Talking Health Tech Audience Survey. This helps us prioritize content, hone in key messages, and refine the show to make it even better. We also want to understand who the biggest cohorts of our audience are. So I'd love for you to take 5 or 10 minutes to have your say and complete the survey. Everyone who completes it goes in the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of THT Plus membership credits to put towards a membership for yourself as an individual or to help get the word out about your company. The link to complete the survey is in the show notes of this episode, or just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey. Nick, Kay, how are you?
Doing well.
Thanks, Pete.
Good. Great to have you on the podcast. And Alcidion being no strangers to Talking Health Tech, it's always good to talk about the big problems and the big opportunities that exist within healthcare. For those that don't know yourselves, perhaps just give us a high level and what you do within the Alcidion crew. Nick.
Thanks, Pete. I look after marketing and analytics within Alcidion. Marketing bit's obvious. The analytics side of things, we look at supporting our customers in terms of the reporting and the insights that they develop around performance, and also any of the sort of AI stuff we do around predictive analytics and those sort of areas. But over to you, Kay.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, so I'm Director of Product Management at Alcidion. Been doing that role for about a year. I have a background. I was in the marketing area that Nick is looking after now for a little while, but have a background in product and account management. And I think that that's important because one of the key areas in product management is making sure that we're listening to what our customers are needing from the software as well too. So work closely with our development teams, obviously, to make sure that we get quality product that's meeting customer needs out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess then diving into it and thinking about those customer needs within a healthcare setting, particularly in the context of patient flow, which we're talking about today. Set the scene for me, Kay. Tell me a little bit more about what patient flow actually is.
Okay, patient flow. I have a background, like longer than I care to say, in digital healthcare, and sort of started off working in the PAS space and then moved into the EMR space. And I think that's where patient flow wraps it all up nicely together, because it gives that both that clinical and operational perspective on managing care delivery, both at an individual patient level and across the enterprise. It does have multiple objectives. I mean, primarily, of course, it's the patient. They're the center of this. And having an optimal stay for the patient, doing what we can to make sure that they're the least impacted by patient moves or their care and everything like that, is really the most important objective there. From a clinical perspective, it supports the whole team and creates that team environment for them to work together in order to deliver that optimal care to the patient. Then you can look at it from the operational perspective. So, you know, executives at hospital working with scarce capacity and increasing demand need to understand what's going on in real time. And we'll talk a lot about the importance of availability of real-time data as we go through this. And so really, you know, just in summary, it gives you that sort of enterprise perspective on what is happening with the ability to drill down to an individual patient.
And Nick, I think about, you know, what Kay's described there, and she kind of alluded to at the start, you know, the concepts around patient flow existed within the healthcare setting long before you know, huge amounts of technology were injected to the whole process. But sometimes we just think about patient flow and technology in two as one kind of interchangeable blob. But I think it's important we think about those things kind of separately for a second and kind of unpack a little bit more about like what is the role of technology when we're thinking about these concepts of patient flow.
Yeah, for me, the most important thing is actually not to think technology first. It's to think about clinician and patient first. And patient safety, and then think about where does it make sense for technology to be applied to the problem and the challenges presented by patient flow. And there are some key areas where that makes sense. And the first one is around data and data interoperability, or as I like to talk about it, data liberation from some of the existing health IT assets that organizations have invested in. And how do we make that data available and put it in front of the clinician at the point of care, at the point in time that a decision needs to be made, and inform them with the best information that we can give them. So where we look at the role of technology, it's first of all in getting access to that data and making it available. And then it's about, well, how do we use technology to support the clinical workflow in a way that it is going to release time to care and support the effective delivery of care for the patient. So it might be in presenting, as we do, an electronic patient journey board. So replacing that whiteboard in a ward with a digital version of that capability that can be customized to the clinical workflow, but then present real-time, as Kay said, real-time information out of the PAS or the EMR that it's linked to. And so you end up with that sync between those systems and the information available at the time the care is needed. And there's a bunch of other modules that we've got that support different parts of the clinical workflow. And probably the biggest piece of feedback that we get is around that positive mapping we do of our technology and our way of working into the clinical workflow.
Got it. What did you call it? Data liberation?
Data liberation.
That was cool. I like that one. We're gonna be using more of that. We need some data liberation. So that's helpful in terms of, you know, understanding the elements and the why a little bit more, and the perhaps also the bits and pieces of it. I'd love to unpack a bit more about the components of what a patient flow solution might actually look like, though.
So, and there are multiple different ways to look at this, and it will look different, you know, potentially at each hospital you might go to, largely driven by what problems that they're looking to solve and what their way of working is. And I think that that's one of the benefits that you can actually, as Nick was saying, align and support the clinical workflow. Patient flow has applicability in acute settings through to rehab, through to aged care. And virtual care even. It doesn't really matter. Your aim, I guess the overarching aim, as I said, is to optimize that patient journey, make sure that their experience is the best that they can possibly hope to experience because they have to. And, you know, then it comes back to those things like, so what are the things that we've got control of from that hospital perspective to ensure that that happens? And if I start, say, with one of the basic building blocks being a bed, hospitals are made up essentially of beds. They could be chairs, they can be cubicles, they can be whatever. But getting the patient in the right bed from the time that they are admitted is incredibly important to both their experience and the quality of care that they're going to receive. I mean, I remember talking with one of a clinical colleague from quite a few years back and talking about the challenge that they're faced when they've got patients that aren't allocated to their home ward or the ward of their specialty. You know, they can do their round and then they've got to walk to the other end of the hospital because they've got one patient that is an outlier and hasn't been able to be allocated to the appropriate spot. It just creates such a logistic challenge and a care challenge. You know, you could be a post-surgical patient on a medical ward. That creates a challenge for the nursing staff as well too. So it's getting the patient and getting the resources in the places that they need to be. So whether that be physical or even human resources as well too. If you take a step up maybe from that, looking at the overall enterprise as the hospital, and seeing what is the status of that at the moment is also a key element of what we believe makes a true and total patient flow solution. So a lot of people might just think about the dashboards on the wards, as Nick was mentioning as well too. Command centres give the executives more of that operational perspective, that exact real-time status of what is happening across the hospital, highlights information to them that they need to take action about, and then they can immediately address what might be a constraint, a challenge, a demand overflow, etc., which again gets back to the patient, of course. So it's sort of wrapped up that way. So it really goes from beginning to end in terms of patient journey, using that word that I shouldn't be using, throughout a hospital stay, and every element that happens throughout.
The Talking Health Tech podcast has evolved a lot over the years, all based on audience feedback. Now I need your help. Yes, you, to shape the future of this show. Between now and the end of June, we're running our biggest campaign to date in order to understand what makes the global healthcare ecosystem tick. Last time we ran our Talking Health Tech audience survey, we learnt 40% of our audience are clinicians, 77% of our audience tune in for professional development and market awareness, 8% of people listen to Talking Health Tech for competitor profiling, and only 2% of people listen to the podcast to fall asleep. And this time around, I can't wait to find out about your preferences for audio versus video content, which topics we should dive into more, preferences for hosts and formats and geographical reach and so much more. And don't worry, we'll be sharing all the insights once all the responses are collected as well. So if you're a supporter of Talking Health Tech and you can spare 5 or 10 minutes, please complete our 2024 audience survey. And to say thanks for your input, everyone who completes the survey goes into the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of credits towards THT Plus membership. Go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey or the links in the show notes of this episode as well. So that makes sense to me from the bed management perspective, that like that seems quite clear. Then I'm trying to understand a little bit more about, I guess, other parts within the hospital system that the solution might assist with, like, say, the ward component. Can you unpack that for me a little bit?
Yeah, I think one of those interesting things, and we've probably all seen pictures of the, I guess you call them manual whiteboards, but the things with the whiteboard markers and things like that, which have been traditionally used in hospital wards for years and years and years, and it's reliant on people updating information. It's also reliant on not somebody brushing by and wiping off a whole lot of data as they, you know, yeah, rub up against a whiteboard as well too, which can happen. And all the magnetic markers get moved away and moved around. So immediately you think you've got a critical result for John Smith rather than Jane Smith, basically. So the practice is sort of has been there for quite some time. And that gets back to where we sort of started talking in terms of where does technology add value to this area? And in providing a digital solution, it gives us that much more flexibility in the way that the information is presented. We can take in data from any range of sources that is available to us, and then highlight what is critical to the people on the ward. So immediately, and every member of the care team can see when there's a critical result come back from a patient. They, you know, and they don't need to be in front of that one static whiteboard on the wall of, you know, near the worst nurse's station on the ward. They can be whenever, wherever they need to be able to see that. And they all see it at the same time. They all have access to the rest of the supporting information that's available there. And I think one of the key things there is that when you think about standard ward practices like handover, immediately you've got a reliable, consolidated point of focus for the whole care team to understand what's happening to their patients. Step back. What has happened to their patients? What's the status of their patients now? And then what is planned or not planned for their patients in their next phases of care? So really they're working in concert much more than they were before.
I wanted to build on something Kay said around command centers and just expand on some of the, I like to visualize the problem with patient flow as we start to talk about this. And if I give an analogy that I think can be kind of valuable is thinking about a pipe that's really bumpy or has a lot of, you know, maybe it's an older pipe and it's got a lot of buildup on the inside of it, right? You need pressure to force the water through because it doesn't flow nice and easily, right? Whereas you take a nice, clean, white plastic pipe, the new pipes that we're replacing some of the older pipes with, and you don't need that pressure to push the water through because it just flows. And that analogy is a very simple way of thinking about a hospital system. It's one thing for us to go in and look at a particular part of the system. It might be a ward that's facing a challenge of moving patients through. It might be ramping at the front end. It might be getting people out of ED into an inpatient bed. They're all point problems. But if we look at the system as a whole and we start to think about how patients flow through the system and everybody has their own journey, that starts to give you the concept, the sort of the broader concept of what we're trying to solve when we talk about implementing a patient flow solution, supporting bed managers to get bed allocation right, to support command center views of understanding where those pinch points are going to occur from a demand and a capacity matching process. And this doesn't happen at just one point in the hospital system. It happens again and again and again and again and again as patients flow through the system. So it's this constant moving beast of trying to get demand and capacity matched so that we've got patients in the right spot to get the best care.
That's a great analogy, and that's helpful to think about. And if I reflect on that and what Kay spoke about too there before about some of the tools we've got to try and keep that flow going, and you know we've all seen the big whiteboard that's there, and that's one way. But I, as you said that, I think, well, isn't that the role then of the EMR these days to kind of replace that? Like, where does, help me understand where this patient flow concept and having a patient flow solution piece tie in with the EMR?
I think if you think back to what was the purpose of an EMR, and we think back to their origins in the US as well too, it was to document care that was provided to a patient. So essentially you could bill for it. So really it is on that sort of focus between the care provider and the patient. Individual care delivery is really what an EMR is built to support. A patient flow solution actually does that, but also steps it up that level as well too, so that you can look at whether it's cohorts of patients based on a different criteria or populations of patients. And you're also, though, looking at the logistics of patient care, because just me providing care to a patient as an individual without looking at it from, well, what impact am I having on my colleagues, on the other patients on ward, on the next patient to come into that bed? Without looking at that broader picture, it's sort of really only one part of the overall solution. I think, you know, a patient flow solution adds value to an EMR. It doesn't need an EMR to be of value. As we've talked about, we can take data in from any range of systems and present that consolidated picture, but it can happily coexist with an EMR as well too, depending on what you're doing. And we've actually done that with quite a few clients, both relatively new EMR users as well as quite sophisticated EMR users, yeah, that have recognized that it's that sort of level on top of that individual patient interaction that creates that system of record to, in order to be able to manage care delivery more effectively.
I think about that then, and the need for those tools to coexist. We're going to need to lean into another thing that Alcidion does really well too, I imagine, which is around this interoperability piece and the data. If we're using systems that can be effectively used in harmony and changeably and stuff, having the data in a format that allows it to flow, would obviously, it makes sense to me that it would assist in these patient flow solutions, right?
Yeah. So there's a podcast that we did with you guys just recently where we were talking about our My Precision platform. Yeah. And My Precision is built to liberate data. We talked about it earlier, and convert that data into a FHIR format. So we map all that data into a FHIR ontology, and then make that data available to the applications that sit on top of Miya Precision. So all of our patient flow applications and our other solutions sit on top of Miya Precision and take advantage of that data available in the FHIR standard. And that is key, absolutely key, to get that data in an interoperable standard. So the work we do is to integrate with those existing systems, the PAS, the EMR, whatever other systems we want to draw data in. We might want to pull data from an imaging system or a pathology system. And so we map that data into FHIR, if it's not already in the FHIR format, make it available on the Miya Precision platform in real time. It's an event bus. And so as that data is updated in those source systems, it's updated on the FHIR event platform, and our applications that sit on top of that FHIR event platform get informed of that update to that data. And the presentation layer for the clinicians, in this case on, say, a digital whiteboard, get an update to that data.
I'm thinking then from a hospital's perspective, and they're, I guess, I get the why and I get the concepts, and your analogy is helpful there in terms of the levels of friction through the pipe, right? But if I'm thinking like practical levers and things that I can be doing within the hospital setting to actually, you know, move the needle on some of these patient flow challenges, like let's get to the nitty-gritty how a little bit more, can we?
Okay, and I guess, yeah, we can continue the pipe analogy as well too. And looking at, you know, it's quite often, where is my problem is nearly the hardest question, because it can be, you know, can I see the trees for the forest, or the forest for the trees, or whatever it is. ED ramping, it's on the front of every newspaper. It's you know, the headline of all the media that's out there. And you think, oh my God, I've got to do something about ED ramping, ambulance ramping at ED. That's my problem, whatever. Okay, how do I address ambulance ramping? Well, I could increase my ED capacity. That's great, but then I can get all my patients into ED. Where do they go after that if they've got to get admitted? And by looking at these, that sort of singular focus in terms of what is my problem, all you're doing is pushing the problem down the pipe, basically, from that side of things. So it's looking, and this is where patient flow gives you that benefit, and practicing patient flow management sort of more from that theoretical perspective, it gives you that full picture. If, you know, addressing a point problem here may not alleviate the overall problem. All it may do is push the problem down the pipe further. So this is where we sort of say that, you know, if you look at that overall picture, that a patient flow system, a command center, et cetera, will make that the factors, the criteria that you need to know about visible to you, so you can make appropriate decisions, and then work out, you know, maybe in a sort of a phased approach, how you're going to address each of those, but you're recognizing the implications for the other parts of the ecosystem as well too.
I'm gonna jump in and give you another analogy. I love my analogies.
Please.
This one is a funnel. And imagine filling a funnel with sand, but putting your finger over the end of it, right? And you're essentially stopping anything from flowing through. When I think about how to solve a patient flow problem, it's not actually to start at the front. You've got to start at the back. So how do we take the finger off the funnel and allow some of the sand to flow through? And as we allow some of the sand to flow through, we create more capacity, which allows more sand to flow through and more sand to flow through. And we essentially free up capacity to be able to solve problems. So Kay mentioned earlier, one of the problems we see in healthcare is outliers. When we can't find a bed for somebody in the ward that they need to go to, we put them in another ward and they're called an outlier. That creates a logistical problem in servicing that patient. And there's all sorts of documentation out there that talk about the impact on patient length of stay associated with outliers, and in some cases in patient safety and care outcomes. We can't solve outliers unless we free up capacity in the ward that patient needs to go to. In order to do that, we need somebody to be discharged down the line. They either need to move to a step down service or to go home, to be discharged maybe into a virtual care program, or to be actually discharged from the hospital. One of the one of the states, I was recently listening to a problem that was talked about. I won't name names, but they talked about stranded patients and how the major hospitals in that system have a significant number of stranded patients in the hospital because they can't find a downstream bed for these patients. And it's to do with, you know, aged care bed availability and problems downstream. But the resultant impact of that, when you trace that all the way back, is that we end up with a ramping problem.
Right. Yeah. It's all kind of tied together. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As Kay was describing earlier as well, there's a few levers and things that can be done to try and avoid problems or get out of the newspaper or, like, you know, risk mitigation kind of strategies around that. But and I guess, you know, you're then avoiding potential things to go wrong. I'd love to learn a little bit more about, you know, some of the benefits that you've seen kind of perhaps more holistically within a health setting or within a hospital system. Are we just talking about stopping bad things from happening, or is there more to this whole patient flow solution?
Yeah, probably more to it is fair to say. I think one of the obvious things is, and I don't like to say improved length of stay, I like to say optimized length of stay. So the patient is in the hospital for the time that is appropriate for them to receive the care that they need. You know, you've got all the terminology like avoidable bed days and things like that. Hospitals are, you know, dangerous places. Every time you go into a hospital, you're at the risk of infection and things like that. So you want to be there the least amount of time that is possible. Your recuperation is better when you're home as well too. So that focus on patient discharge and patient discharge planning from when the patient is initially admitted means that you are targeting a length, a sort of a discharge date, which results in an optimal length of stay for them. So improvements in length of stay, which then release capacity, allow further patients to be treated essentially. And as Nick said, hopefully it gives you more opportunity to get the right patient in the right ward at the time. So that's just one of the sort of obvious areas of benefit. One of the other areas, and we were talking about bed management earlier as well too, bed management has traditionally been a very manual process. When I first started working with a new CEO at Alfred Health, and he hadn't come from healthcare, he asked what he thought was the sort of simple question about, you know, how many beds have we got? He hadn't come from healthcare. He thought that was a pretty simple question. He asked maybe 4 or 5 people. He got, I think, probably 8 to 10 different answers. He didn't understand that you had to qualify how many beds were they funded beds, were they staffed beds, were they open beds, were they, you know, whatever. Anyhow, he wasn't satisfied that he was getting an answer. So what he ended up doing was walking physically around all the hospitals and counting beds. And then because he didn't trust that he had counted all the beds, he made me physically walk around all the hospitals and count beds, and then we could compare notes. You don't have to do that anymore. That's what just a little bit of a side story. But one of the really key things that we've identified at one of our recent implementations is that the number of phone calls to the bed management office have decreased by more than 60%. I mean, that's so significant in terms of how much more effective they can be in their work and what they're doing and not be checking up on things, have that confidence that the information that they're looking at in the solution is actually reliable and representative of the current state.
I mean, that's meaningful in itself, isn't it? And unnecessary distractions and questions that can be addressed, you know, directly within the system that can make a real impact, and doing those at scale can be transformational. So that's good. On that, you know, thinking about the all the different stakeholders involved, that you touched on a very important element of it, which is the end users of these solutions, and the clinicians, the frontline, that the clinical workforce that are utilizing patient flow solutions. What kind of responses have you seen from the introduction of these types of tools?
It's actually quite, we'll just say, one of the most gratifying parts of our jobs, I think, in terms of the adoption, the relatively low levels of training we need to provide because of, we've we're able to present information in a way that's immediately understandable. It's intuitive to the user, whether they're clinical, operational, et cetera, because it's aligned with their workflow, their requirements, their understanding of what they need. They want to know and they don't need to go looking for it. It doesn't come without challenges. I mean, you know, the manual whiteboard that we were talking about before, I can just draw another column on that very easily if I want to capture more data. I can move a magnetic, you know, marker very simply if I just want to do things. So there is that perception in early days sometimes that people may be losing flexibility and autonomy. But I think once they start using the digital solution, they can see the benefits that they're getting. They're getting far more accurate data. They're getting it in real time. They're getting a far more extensive population of data and information as well too. So the adoption is really, it's just the value is not hard to sort of demonstrate once they start using it, which makes adoption much easier.
Yeah. We had a great stat that came out the other day that was talking about handover and how every shift there used to be an hour and a half of prep that would go into handover, and that's been reduced down to less than 15 minutes.
Wow.
So just as one example of the kinds of benefits, right? It's just released time back to care, and there are so many other areas we could talk about. That's just one very, very practical example.
Yeah, love that. As you're talking too, like as we're thinking about digitizing a lot of information, a lot of data that's available, then an opportunity to do things. I'm going to guess that there's an opportunity for artificial intelligence to play a role here with patient flows. Talk to me about what you're thinking there.
It's one of the most exciting areas, to be honest, of where we're going with the solutions. We've got so many areas that we've already done work in and others that we're so excited to get into. Just being able to take the data that we've got and understand something like ED presentations and what we think in terms of how many people are going to present at ED in the next hour, the next 2 hours, the next 3 hours, and so on. Then being able to take that and think about, well, how many of those patients are going to go into an inpatient admission? And again, provide a predictive analytic view of how many of those patients are going to need to go into an inpatient bed. So we can start to not just study the demand and capacity mismatches, but we can actually predict them. And then we can suggest, well, actually, maybe, you know, we need to do something about this ahead of time so that we can avoid this occurring. And so going from predictive analytics into prescriptive analytics and thinking about making suggestions in command centers. So that's a fantastic place where we've been working. We're also looking at the other end of the journey and thinking about EDD and how do we provide insight into whether we feel an EDD is accurate. Or whether there are...
Wait, EDD is...
Estimated data discharge. I was going to pick that up.
I've been caught out. So the estimated data discharge, is it accurate? Let's say it's today. What's the likelihood that that patient will actually go home today? And we can look at various factors that are going to influence whether that patient is likely to go home today and provide a predicted likelihood of that. One of the other areas I want to mention, and Kay will make sure I mention this one, though, is the work we've been doing in NLP. And we've been supporting clinicians in noting and using NLP in noting. And we're able to pull out the key concepts from what's being written and then tie those to codes. So reducing the administration burden that's on the clinicians through the use of NLP and noting is just profound, absolutely profound. And the feedback we're getting from clinicians is transformative, releasing hours. You know, we had one the other day that was saying an hour per shift I'm getting back in terms of time because of this noting capability that's been released. So really tangible benefit that is why Kay and I do this as a job, right? This is why we're here.
Lastly then, you know, for those that, you know, that could be a healthcare provider that's heard almost, you know, a couple of hours here and a couple of hours there that all add up to, you know, transformational change, opportunity for some huge benefits and address some operational challenges that they might have faced in the past, particularly in the patient flow area. Any advice you'd like to give to those in that situation?
You go first, Nick.
I think there's a lot of confusion out there about where to invest your IT dollar in healthcare. And one of the important things to think about is, well, what systems are really going to make a difference? And there's a lot of confusion about whether an EMR is required. And the first thing I'd say is there are a lot of healthcare systems out there now who have decided that we're beyond the must have an EMR phase. It's not to say that it's not going to be appropriate in certain cases. There are some health systems where absolutely having an EMR is appropriate, but there are some that don't need it, that can get away with having a simpler digital record of the patient journey. And there are others who have an EMR who are grappling with different problems. The advice I'd give to somebody who is struggling with challenges such as ramping, such as challenges of getting patients out of the ED and into an inpatient bed, is that looking at a patient flow solution, either from an operational point of view and thinking about business processes and supporting their teams in understanding the importance of patient flow and the operational practices that are required to optimize patient flow, is absolutely going to equip their teams in supporting patient flow. Then in concert with that, thinking about the technology solution that's going to support them in reinforcing those practices to optimize patient flow. So not giving them access to data is going to undermine the success of a patient flow initiative. Not giving them access to real-time information and the ability to update that information is going to impede communication between teams, and it's going to impede the foresight you have of the demand that's coming at you. So I would say there's really two steps of tackling some of these patient flow issues. One is the operational practices and the education of the teams in how to execute those practices. And the second is the systems that you use to reinforce and support being successful in implementing those practices. Kay, please go for it. Build on that.
No, thanks, Nick. I guess, you know, look, what I would say is looking at things in terms of, you know, speed to value proposition as well to a patient flow system, given the availability of data in a health ecosystem. There are usually a lot of disparate systems, most of which provide data in one way, fashion or format, but that we can transform, as Nick was saying earlier, into a FHIR format and make it usable. It means that we can actually get something in there that's providing value back to the clinical and operational teams relatively quickly, supporting their workflows, understanding what they're doing from that perspective. And so as somebody looking, you know, at I'm running the hospital, how can I immediately make us more effective, efficient, etc., it's one of those areas where it provides a really tangible opportunity to affect change relatively quickly and with relatively minimal disruption, which is really important. You know, you can't take time away from patient care and things like that. So I think just sort of looking at it from that perspective sort of is just another option that should be considered when people are looking at, you know, am I taking my first step on a digital transformation path, or am I further down the path and I'm looking to enhance what I've already got?
That's so good. Look, and I guess that's I reflect on the conversation we've had and the importance that not just the importance that interoperable data has, not just for, you know, very tangible and real benefits that exist within the health system in terms of, you know, reducing unnecessary time that clinicians are spending, but also really importantly, and many other benefits too, but also really importantly on the patient side as well. And by bringing these two elements together around, you know, good solid interoperable data that's, you know, by FHIR standards, can then tie in with really solid patient flow solutions, can have some cool transformational impact. So I'll make sure we've got the details for Alcidion in the show notes for this episode for people to check out and get in touch. And as THT Plus members, got a good presence on our Talking Health Tech website too. So make sure you get in touch if you're keen to discuss further. Nick, Kay, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks, Pete.
Hey, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode. If you made it this far, you're the perfect person that I want to hear from. Our THT Plus audience survey is now open until the end of June, and I personally read every submission. In fact, if you leave a comment in the survey that you heard this promotion in a podcast episode, I promise I'll reply directly to you by email with a personal note of thanks. And I'll even buy you a coffee next time I see you in person. It's pretty easy. Just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey and have your say.
For more content and community about technology and healthcare, visit talkinghealthtech.com.